is Dan Wampipaw. Welcome to First Nations Radio. I'll be your host today. We've got a little bit of news. Actually, we've got a lot of news. And we've got some music for you. But first, we're going to start you off with a little bit of The Tribes, of our theme music for First Nations Radio. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Red Oak Descendants and Nauia Natives of One Wind Indigenous Alliance. And a couple of announcements. Number one, Mary Youngblood is coming into town. She will be playing her flute music at the Unitarian Church, November 20th. I don't know how many seats it takes, but get your seats while they're available. Hopefully going to get an interview with her at some time, one of these Sundays before here and there. So stay tuned and we'll be able to talk with her and possibly open up for some questions. Mary Youngblood is a female flute player, which is very unusual in Indian country. Usually it's a male-dominated instrument traditionally. But she's nominated for an Emmy and has won 2 Grammys. And right now, actually, we are playing stickball at Lithia Park. So if you guys want to come over and check out some native gaming that we have going on at Lithia Park, going on right now at the Lower Duck Pond. That's basically by the Abraham Lincoln statue. And today is Sunday the 18th at 2:02. So just to keep you updated, we will be rebroadcasting this show on a Monday. So also we'll be having our winter solstice storytelling December 19th be at the Bellevue Grange. And our December social, first Saturday of the December, we'll be having a slideshow by Benson Lanford on Native moccasins. So I guess it's very interesting. So for this first hour, we will be listening to Series 1 of, the Wisdom of the Elders program. And we'll be starting that here in a minute. And I'll be interspersing with news and whatnot. So I'd like to thank The Tribe for their intro music. And now we have Wisdom of the Elders.
This is the Archaeology Channel, and I'm Rick Pettigrew. ALI created the Archaeology Channel in part to give voice to indigenous peoples. Their knowledge and traditions are a precious element of the human cultural heritage. We are proud now to present Wisdom of the Elders, a series of one-hour Native American audio programs offering a rich tapestry of oral history, storytelling, music, and other cultural features. If you would like to become a supporting friend of Wisdom of the Elders, click on the Wisdom of the Elders link on this page, or go to www.wisdomoftheelders.org.
We remember, we listen, we learn from those who have walked before us, from those who can teach us now. Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. Every week we bring you stories and songs of elders and storytellers from the Native Nations of North America. I'm Arlie Neskahai of the Diné Nation. In the next hour, we'll visit with Pulitzer-winning author N. Scott Mamade of the Kiowa Nation, who speaks of sacred earth. Then we'll hear from Judy Blue Horse Skelton, who offers us health and healing from the plant world.
Native people have been using and working and have had a unique relationship with the plant people for thousands of years.
Then we join Paiute song carrier Judy Trejo for stories and songs from her great-grandmother.
The elders were the only people that accepted me. I was told that as a very small child, I had the ability to heal wild animals.
Stay with us for Wisdom of the Elders. This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai.
There is a place, a round, trampled patch of the red earth near Carnegie, Oklahoma.
This piece of earth is a sacred place for N. Scott Mamade, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and scholar. As a member of the Kiowa Nation, Mamade spoke before the United Nations in 1992 about the land and culture he cherishes. We'll hear from Barbara Roberts with this profile.
Sacred, that which is spiritual or holy. Ground, the earth and the soil beneath us. Pulitzer Prize-winning poet and scholar N. Scott Mamade asserts there's a mysterious need to experience our closeness to the earth. Mamade is a Native American from the Kiowa tribe. Kiowa country is mainly in southwestern Oklahoma, known for its soaring mountains and rippling streams. That landscape, along with his father's tribal heritage, helped Mamadé develop a deep affinity for sacred ground. Here, he takes on the task of describing the indescribable.
Sacred ground is ground that has been invested with belief. Belief at its root exists independent of meaning. That is, its expression and object may escape what we can perceive as definable meaning. The intrinsic power of sacred ground is often ineffable and abstract.
While Mamadé maintains that sacredness is abstract, he also finds the power of Earth's beauty both compelling and tangible. Mamadé says so compelling that he can experience the beauty of Earth no matter where he is.
To encounter the sacred is to be alive at the deepest center of human existence. Sacred places are the truest definitions of the Earth. They stand for the Earth immediately and forever. They are its flags and its shields. If you would know the Earth for what it really is, learn it through its sacred places. At Devil's Tower or Canyon de Chelly or the Cahokia Mounds, you touch the pulse of the living planet. You feel its breath upon you. You become one with a spirit that pervades geologic time, that indeed confounds time and space. When I stand on the edge of Monument Valley and behold the great red and blue and purple monoliths floating away in the distance, I have the certain sense that I see beyond time. There, the Earth lies in eternity.
Mamadé sees sacred ground as a marriage between the spiritual and the material.
Acts of sacrifice make sacred the Earth. Language and the sacred are indivisible. The Earth and all its appearances and expressions exist in names and stories and prayers and spells. North American place names are a sacred music. Medicine Wheel, Bear Butte, Boba Kiveri, Chaco, Sleeping Ute, Luka Chukai, Wounded Knee.
Mamadé says the sacred transcends culture. Here he quotes Romanian religious historian Mircea Eliade. For Mamadé, the late theologian nails the concept of sacredness from a cerebral perspective.
Mircea Eliade has said that the sacred in all times is the revelation of the real, an encounter with that which saves us by giving meaning to our existence. Yes, yes, I want to say, here is a brilliant equation of the sacred with reality, salvation, and meaning. But there is more, for the sacred finally transcends definition. The mind does not comprehend it. It is at last to be recognized and acknowledged in the heart and soul. Those who seek to study or understand the sacred in academic terms are misled. The sacred is not a discipline. It is a dimension beyond the ordinary and beyond the mechanics of analysis. For those who would come to the sacred, to sacred ground, it is a kind of mystical experience, a deep and singular encounter.
For many of the Kiowa Nation, the embodiment of the sacred is the gourd dance. The men gather and rhythmically lift up their heels to the beat of a drum. Their upper bodies correspond as they shake a rattle to the same beat. The rattles are made from actual gourds, or sometimes tin cans and decorated with beads and feathers and horsehair. The dance style is slow and rhythmic. Not everyone can participate in the gourd dance. You have to be elected to a clan. It's a distinct honor to take part in this ritual. Mamadé tells a story of how a place becomes sacred by using an example from his Kiowa homeland in Oklahoma. For Mamadé, a sacred place ties family together and shows our oneness with the earth.
There is a place, a round, trampled patch of the red earth near Carnegie, Oklahoma, where the Kiowa gourd dances were held in the early years of the century. When my father was 6 or 8 years old, my grandfather, who was a member of the Tainpe, or gourd dance society, took him there. In one of the intervals of the dance, there was a giveaway, an ancient plains tradition of giving gifts as a public expression of honor and esteem. My grandfather's name was called, and he let go of my father's hand and strode out upon the dance ground. Then a boy, about my father's age, led a black hunting horse, prancing and blowing into the circle, and placed the reins in my grandfather's hands, still warm with my father's touch. The great muscles of the horse rippled in light, and bright ribbons were fixed in its mane and tail. My father watched in wonder and delight, his heart bursting with excitement and pride. And when he told me of that moment, as he did a number of times because I craved to hear it, I could see it as vividly as if I had been there. The brilliant image of that moment remained in my father's mind all his life, and it remains in mine. It is a thing that related him and relates me to the sacred earth.
Perhaps Mamadé best conveys that brilliant imagery in his poetry.
This afternoon is older than the giving of gifts and the rhythmic scraping of the red earth. My father's father's name is called, and the gift horse stutters out, whole, and the whole horizon in its eyes. In the giveaway is beaded the blood memories of fathers and sons. Oh, there is nothing like this afternoon in all the miles and years around. And I am not here, but grandfather, father, I am here.
Mamadé says where there is the sacred, there is also sacrilege. He calls it the theft of the sacred.
When I was a small boy, there was a box of bones in the barn of my Kiowa homestead on Rainy Mountain Creek, where I loved to go and visit my grandmother. They were the bones of a horse, a legendary hunter, a horse of exceptional speed and endurance. The horse belonged to my grandfather, who owns many horses and who died before I was born, just before I was born. The bones were for me a tangible link to my heritage. They were sacred. Their very existence made of the barn a singular place, a sacred shrine. And then, one day I went there and the box of bones was gone. They had been stolen. Even as a child, I knew an unnameable sadness, a sense of loss that would from that moment adhere to my heart.
While that sadness remains affixed to his heart, N. Scott Mamadé would grow up to know great satisfaction as a painter, a writer, and a poet. But perhaps his most meaningful distinction would come in 1969. It was the same year he won the Pulitzer, the year he was elected to a Kiowa dance clan.
I saw them lying stacked high on shelves, cardboard boxed and labeled, a skeleton mother holds her embedded child. Uncovered, no blankets, no nothing, just how I was looking at myself, buried alive. Terry donations, government research, science, churches, and museums. I was looking at myself, buried alive. I am my ancestors, my mother's stolen grave. Wipe my face from the right to live on this land. Creation came, you still take, 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 you still take.
The feature on N. Scott Mamadé was produced by Barbara Roberts. Music director Nico Nguyen of the Nakota Nation has written the theme song of Wisdom of the Elders. Let's give it a listen.
We chose Ani, we chose Ashke, Inilawiuski, Okiapo, Wasake, Ochokai.
Here we stand before you. Here we stand, humble and human. Here we stand to dance with eagles. Here we stand in the four directions, believing the teachings, searching for ourselves, praying for the healing, a mission of goodwill. Here we sit in a sweat lodge. Here we are, a seat of expressions. Here we sit in the arms of our mother. Here we are, seven generations. Tears, grandma, tears, woven beads of blood. Dreams, sweet grass dreams, vision of hope begun. Grandma, Grandpa, tell us the value. Remind us to remember the trail of tears you walked. Our history is cradled, the creatures and the rocks. Oh, we will walk.
We will walk.
We will honor.
We will honor.
Respect the wisdom of our elders.
To live with health from generation to generation, preserving the culture, quietness, peacekeeping, spiritual balance, the red road of happiness, helping one another with power from Creator. Respect and honor all peoples and all creation.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Marley Nesky. This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Marley Nesky. Judy Blue Horse Skelton is Nez Perce on her father's side of the family and her mother's Cherokee. Today, Judy speaks of herbal medicine and a native way of making relationships with the plant people.
Native people have been using and working and have had a unique relationship with the plant people. For thousands of years, our traditional knowledge of the gifts of the plants was shared with the first arrivals from Europe. They too have and had an herbal tradition, and when they arrived, they were anxious to understand and learn what our plants here were used for. Many of them were unique and not found in Europe. The tribes were very generous in sharing this information, and in fact, the U.S. Pharmacopoeia, which is a large volume, large book that's published annually and contains all the medicines sanctioned for doctors to dispense as medicine. Much of that information about our plants was provided by Native people, Native healers. It wasn't until the 1950s and 1960s that much of our plant medicine was actually purged from the U.S. pharmacopoeias. If you pick up an old used one, you'll find echinacea in there, you'll find Oregon grape, you'll find all sorts of plants that the medical profession felt were no longer valuable once antibiotics were discovered. So they took them out. And what's interesting today, as we find antibiotics less and less effective, we have built up tolerances to them. The bacteria have mutated so that they no longer respond to that antibiotic. That our old plant medicine, many of which have antibiotic properties, antimicrobial, antibacterial, as I tell the kids, all the antis, kills bacteria, kills microbes, are still there for us, and they work very effectively against some of these microorganisms that the antibiotics are no longer having much effect on. Because herbal medicine is becoming so popular, many of us herbalists are being asked to share a lot of information. And as is typical in our modern American society, people want immediate gratification. They want the instant answer or easy answer. And herbal medicine is a lifetime commitment. It's a life study. It's a life work. And while there are many books out today on plant medicine, plant ID, how to make salves, how to make teas, I encourage anyone who's interested in herbal medicine to find someone to study with, to go out with, and to start cultivating their relationship with the plants. Be out in the garden, be out in parks. If you can get out of the city, if you're out of the city already, just take a walk, get introduced to the plants, start spending quiet time with the plants. They're your first teachers. But find someone to be with, to apprentice with, and get to know the plants. Traditionally, plant knowledge comes from dreaming. To dream of a plant, it will share many of its gifts. And those will be the way that that plant can be used by you for many different conditions. It will become clear or be made clear to you how to use the plant. That's the old way. This kind of learning or experience doesn't lend itself easily to book learning. And this is very frustrating to American society, who values the written word above oral tradition, who would rather read about the knowledge than experience the knowledge firsthand. And so many of the books out there may give a list of plants that would be good for hypertension, high blood pressure, and one feels overwhelmed. Which one do I use? Which one's right? And that's where your unique relationship with the plants is the most valuable. You need to be able to discern, to judge for yourself, if this is the right plant for this person at this time. Another traditional way of learning and understanding plant medicine is the idea that if I were treating hypertension for my father at a certain time, there's a particular hawthorn tree that I would gather from. There may be 10 out in the meadow that I'm looking at, but the one that's right for him at this time is the one that I will go to and gather from and prepare him medicine from. This also does not lend itself to be easily written. How does one learn how to discern which of those 10 hawthorn trees to gather from for this one person for this time? And when you begin to understand native healing and plant medicine from this perspective, then you can see where it's very different than reading a book, running down to the store and buying a bottle of hawthorn extract in caps. You're probably going to have a different kind of experience. I'm not saying the medicine won't be as good. A lot of what makes good medicine is your intention and your energy behind it, what you bring to it. That's always been a very big part of healing, is the energy and the intention and the state of mind and the preparation of the person doing it. As herbal medicine becomes more popular, you will need to educate yourself about where plants are grown, how they're grown, how they were gathered, if they were all done in a good way, were thank yous offered, did someone leave corn or tobacco or some other gift. And these change the medicine. I was also taught you don't make medicine when you're upset, you don't make medicine when you're angry. It comes right through the medicine. And so to make medicine, to make a tea, to make a salve, to make a poultice, to cook food, that's our first medicine, just to cook food. No one hardly cooks anymore. I gave a shocking statistic how many fast food meals people ate in a week. I can't remember, but it was very high. But just to cook a meal from the heart, you know, we think of these terms like the secret ingredient, that special thing, and is grandmother's love. You can't buy that. And that's the same ingredient when you're making medicine that has to be there. It's love. So if you're interested in learning more about herbal medicine or plant medicine, one begins by preparing oneself for that relationship, because it is not entered lightly, and it's a lifelong work.
Judy Bluehorse Skelton practices and teaches her craft in order that our relationship to the plant people shall carry through the generations. This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskay. Stay with us. Enjoy a traditional story for your day's journey. Then we'll wind up our show today with Judy Trejo, Paiute song carrier and teacher. But first, some Gore Dance music from the Kiowa Nation, brought to you by our music director, Nico Wind.
Once, long ago, in an area between the headwaters of the Yellowstone River and the Black Hills of South Dakota, a Kiowa warrior became separated from his people. Weak and near his final hour, he followed the sound of beautiful singing up a hill until he discovered a red wolf standing on his hind legs, carrying a gourd and singing haunting melodies. The red wolf offered food and water to the warrior, and while regaining his strength, he listened to the instructions of the spirit creature that had saved his life. Was instructed to take these songs and the dances back to his people as a gift, as long as they upheld and followed their Kiowa traditions in a good way. The songs and the dances could be used to honor warriors for bravery and deeds in battle. And, counseled the Red Wolf, in return, always remember me by singing a wolf howl at the end of each song. Thus, the Red Wolf's request is honored to this day at the end of all gourd dance songs.
Thank you.
Many tribes participate in the gourd dance today, and several tribes claim the dance as part of their culture. This story is the Kiowa legend of its origin. The songs are carried by several Kiowa warrior societies. The Kiowa name for the gourd dance means "not afraid to die." In the late 19th century, the government outlawed and nearly eliminated the gourd dance. It was mostly the effort of one man that kept the tradition alive. Bill Kumsa Sr. revived the gourd clan in 1941, and though it was forbidden to do so, he and a few other courageous people began piecing together and then practicing 8 of the traditional gourd dance songs as they remembered them. These songs, descendants of those earlier pieces, were recorded by Canyon Records in the mid-70s. Singers of the Kiowa Gourd Clan have the responsibility of maintaining and keeping the songs alive. Initial membership was made up of warriors and rough riders whose duty was to police and protect their camps. Induction into the Gourd Society is a high honor. In modern times, individuals have been honored with inclusion in the Gourd Society for their achievements on behalf of Native peoples. Today, membership includes doctors, attorneys, educators, and even a Pulitzer Prize winner, N. Scott Momaday. The gourd dance begins with a starting song. The singers set the cadence by tapping the rim of the drum. As they begin singing, the gourd dancers begin to catch the rhythm with their gourds. The drum and gourds blend in unison. After the fourth start, the song is interrupted with a hard beat of the drum, followed by the wolf call. The singers immediately resume the starting song for 4 more rounds. The drumming then picks up, and the dancers rise to their feet and begin the dance. There are many gourd dance songs. The tradition of honoring those who distinguish themselves with a special song has brought us a wealth of music, and as Native people continue to strive and achieve, new songs will be created in their honor. Still, one element remains the same in all gourd dance songs, the howl you hear at the end, honoring Red Wolf.
The story of the gourd dance was produced by Nico Wind. This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. Here's N. Scott Momaday reading the prayer from the night chant of the Navajo, with music by Peter Buffett from the album Spirit on the Hollywood Records label.
A prayer from the night chant of the Navajo begins with homage to Tsegi, Tsegi Ye, the place of origin, place among the rocks. House made of dawn, house made of evening light, house made of dark cloud, house made of male rain, house made of dark mist, house made of female rain, house made of pollen, house made of grasshoppers. Dark cloud is at the door. The trail out of it is dark cloud. The zigzag lightning stands high upon it.
Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Marley Nesky. They say in the old days there were songs for every occasion, every turn of the season, every life transition. And there were songs for daily activities, like among my people, the Diné. There were horse riding songs, corn grinding songs, songs for the weavers as they worked the loom. And just as today we use the radio to keep us company as we go about our daily lives, we sang to ourselves and one another. Can you close your eyes and imagine what a wonderful ambiance to grow up hearing your family singing all the day? Singer-historian Judy Trejo collects songs and carries them with her to teach to new generations. Trejo is a noted singer of songs of the Great Basin, which spans Utah, Nevada, southern Oregon, and southern Idaho, and in recent years has been performing and recording. She has won several awards for her releases, most notably the Indie Award for her release, Circle Dance Songs of the Paiute and Shoshone, on Canon Records. Listen with us now to master singer and teacher, Judy Trejo of the Paiute Culture.
My name is Judy Trejo. I am of Northern Paiute and Pitt River. I can only tell you about the Northern Paiute side, and my lineage begins in Warm Springs, Oregon. I come from a long line of chiefs, beginning with Chief Wiawiwa. The other line of chiefs came from the Quiapamas. I grew up in McDermott, Nevada, and I had a very beautiful childhood. I was born as a very crippled child, had a twisted leg and drugged my foot. And many of the mothers did not want me to play with their children. They would say, "Oh, here she comes. She's got bad pets." All of my pets were wild animals. And I think the pet they really didn't care for was the owl that I had, a one-winged owl. All of the pets that I had were rescued, either by me or somebody else that felt sorry for them. I was told that as a very small child, I had the ability to heal wild animals. The owl I rescued, he was hanging on a fence by his wing, and I put on a buckskin glove, took him home. And child that I was, I put some of that orange mercurochrome on him. And it probably burned his wing just like it did my cuts and scrapes on my knees. So in the morning when I went to check on him, his wing was just hanging by a thread, so I cut it off. And he became very tame, but he rode on my dog's backs whenever I went someplace. And I always, from the time I was 2 years old, had a magpie and a crow that walked along behind me. The elders were the only people that accepted me. They didn't call my pets bad. And to translate what they called me Puhadza, which meant a holy girl. And probably I wasn't very holy because I was very mischievous. I retired from teaching school in 1996. And without realizing it, I started another career.
We are grateful to have some wonderful teachers here at Wisdom of the Elders. The healing traditions are some of the very foundation of our spirituality. They are teachings that maintain and affirm our relationship to the spirit people of the land. Native people of North America have created countless ways to preserve our knowledge and transmit our values and traditions. One way is the storytelling tradition. Here in Wisdom of the Elders, we'll be featuring stories from many tribes across North America. Join us now with Mary Louise Defender Wilson as we enter the world of the storyteller.
He imahed wa ka kanawa ka ihuraka he ti shunkawa kchi ti shunka sapawa yuha na hekchi ti wa ka kanakide wipaka. Somewhere in this part of the country is this cave. And in this cave, there is a very old, old woman. She's so old, she looks like she's ready to crack. She lives in this cave with her big black dog. In this cave is a fire that they keep burning all the time. And on this fire is the food that she's cooking for herself and this dog. But she's sitting there and she's doing quill work on this long strip for a robe. But when the fire looks like it's going to die down, she stands up, but she's so old, has a hard time getting up from the ground. She walks very slow and very slow picks up the stick of wood, very slowly takes it to the fire. When she gets up to get that wood, her dog goes and it rips out the quill work that she did. And then the dog lays back down. So by the time she comes back to her quill work from putting wood in the fire, she doesn't remember how far she did. So then she does the quill work again. This goes on and on and on. She does the quill work, has to put wood in the fire, is very slow, getting up, getting the wood, putting it in the fire. The dog goes over there and rips out what she did again. And according to the story, if she ever finishes that blanket strip, then the world will end. And I remember then somebody making reference to the fact that the world is not going to end because this Makankana and her Shunka, their dog, they will continue to do that unless something very, very drastic happens. I don't think it's going to happen. So my relatives, it has been the practice of all people to tell all the coming generations stories. Each generation learns something new. It seems to be the way of people that they will try to understand what happens in each generation, how that will help the people. Then these stories come into place, and then they are told so that people will live like human beings when they listen to these stories. It seems that that is the way that we should go, that each generation will carry something from the previous one that will make them become more civilized and more high-minded and able to be kind, gentle, and helpful to each other. That is the way it's supposed to be, and that is what we hope will be.
Stories teach us so much about ourselves. Thanks to Mary Louise Defender Wilson for her story and her wisdom today. And to Makoche Records and the North Dakota Council on the Arts. This is Wisdom of the Elders, a weekly show that brings you stories and songs of teachers and elders from the Native Nations of North America. I'm Arlie Nescott. Here on Wisdom of the Elders, we're excited to use new technologies to support our oral traditions. You know, many of our youth may not have access to elders and teachers. In this way, we hope to breathe life to them wherever they may be. And through the songs, stories, and teachings, they may discover a new direction and in time remake their connection to the culture. And to all people of various other cultures and backgrounds who share this great land with us, may you be also called to live joyfully and prayerfully with us as neighbors upon Earth Woman. And may we together utilize our wisdom of the elders to make a better community and future for all. I'm Arlie Nescott. Hagoneh, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service. Learn more about the people and music you hear on Wisdom of the Elders, purchase educational material, or make a contribution to fund programming on our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Discover the growing network of Indigenous oral historians, storytellers, and song carriers. Visit the Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. Executive producer of Wisdom of the Elders is Rose Highbear. Consulting producers, D. May Roberts and Peggy Berryhill. Co-producers, Clark Salisbury and William Ward. Script editor and director, Larry Johnson. Writer, Ann Morin. Our theme music is by music director, Nico Wind. Website assistance from Clark Salisbury, Daniel Ciazon, Kara Briggs, and Rebecca Freeman. Educational materials by Larry McClure. Production assistance by Paul Woodsong, Tina Hagedorn, Sandy Strom, and Victoria Morgan. Distribution manager, Richard Fonseca. Legal advisor, Judd Carasone. Special thanks to Native American Public Telecommunications, American Indian Radio on Satellite, Native Media Resource Center, and Media Rights Productions.
I'd like to thank Rose Highbear, Arlie Nescott, Judy Trejo, Nico Wind, and many others who put this Wisdom of the Elders program together. It's an awesome program, and I've been listening to it off and on my iPod, and I really appreciate some of the teachings that they give. So I'd like to say thank you to Native American Student Union, particularly Bo and Burr, for bringing the stick game to the park over at the Lower Duck Pond. I just got back from there, played about a half hour's worth of shinny, is the European word for stick ball. There's many North American words for it. Bagatawe, Jima, many others. But it's kind of like the same game across the board, but with different rules. So you have a long stick that we made. It's 4 foot, 6 inches, and it has a slight hook on the end of it. And you have two tennis balls hooked together with a string, and you hook the string with the hooked stick. And so, and then you try to hit a goalpost, and you form teams. And basically the only two rules are no high sticking, because you don't want to hurt anybody, and don't touch the double balls. So, and they're playing right now. I don't know how long they'll be playing for, but they started at 1, and they are in full steam right now. So I was on the winning team, of course, for a while there. It was, I think I left, it was 9-6, so... I don't know how they do, you know, because you lose one decent player and, you know, tides can turn very fast. So, my prayers go out to my team. Aho. So, I'd like to announce Mary Youngblood, 2-time Grammy winner, Native American flutist. When Mary, who is half Seminole and half Aleut, performs, you understand the profound spirituality of the sacred Native American flute and its historical courtship and wooing attributes. Her haunting music is much more than a song. It's liquid poetry, a prayer. The flute workshop, that is the 20th at the Unitarian Center at 4th and C in Ashland, and that is a Friday, November 20th at 8 p.m. It's $20 advance, $22 at the door, $10 for teens from 12 to 17 years old. Children under 12 are free with the paying adult. It's to be opened by my drum group, Whistling Elk, and who is a local drum group around here. And she's also doing a flute workshop Saturday, November 21st. Intermediate Advanced Performance Readiness Flute Workshop, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. at the Unitarian Center, $40. Learn advanced techniques and embellishments. Ask questions about performing. A portion of the proceeds benefit Red Earth Descendants, who actually sponsors First Nations Radio here. So you can get tickets at the Music Coop at the A Street Marketplace by visiting, and also by visiting www.stclairevents.com or by calling 541-535-3562. Once again, 541-535-3562. Let's see. The Standing Stone Brewery is a sponsor, along with Ashland Food Co-op, Geppetto's, J.D. Berry Design, Web Spirit Community, and there is some other kind of a logo here that I can't quite make out. I might have to get back to you on that. So, I'd like to thank the sponsors of Mary Youngblood Concert and St. Clair Productions. Speaking of St. Clair Productions, she is also an underwriter of KSKQ, Low Power, 94.9 FM. St. Clair Productions is pleased to be an underwriter of KSKQ, LP, 94.9 FM, Ashland, Oregon. St. Clair Productions is the Rogue Valley's source for live music, with 14 folk and ethnic music concerts at Ashland's Unitarian Center from September through May at the Rogue Valley Blues Festival in January. For a complete listing of upcoming shows, go to www.stclairevents.com or call 541-535-3562. KSKQ LP 94.9 FM. Thanks, St. Clair Productions, for supporting community radio in Ashland, Oregon. Would also like to thank Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice. They proudly support KSKQ LP 94.9 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice brings together labor unions, religious congregations, student groups, and community organizations to improve working people's standard of living, job security, and their right to organize. Visit their website at www.sojwj.org. KSKQ thanks Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice for supporting community radio. Got a very heavy news story here for you. And I'm going to start it off with the 911 down in Sedona, Arizona. Sedona 911. Where's your emergency? Angel Valley. came the breathless female response. Two people not breathing. There's no pulse. Is this result of a shooting or something? The dispatcher asked. No, it's a sweat lodge. Shortly after 5 p.m. Thursday, a man and a woman, reportedly in their 50s, lapsed into unconsciousness during a simulated Native American sweat lodge purification ceremony led by a self-help guru and inspirational speaker at a Sedona retreat. They were pronounced dead at Verde Valley Medical Center, and 19 others were hospitalized for as yet undetermined causes. But all four had been released. One remained in critical condition and three in fair condition Friday at Flagstaff Medical Center. Yavapai County Sheriff's deputies served search warrants Friday at Angel Valley Spiritual Retreat, a new age resort on Oak Creek near Sedona, looking for clues into the deaths and the illnesses. A sweat lodge is an enclosed structure in which heated rocks are doused with water to create steam and sauna-like conditions. Adapted from Native American tradition, it is thought to help purify both body and spirit. Verde Valley Fire District Chief Jerry Dorkson told the Arizona Republic, sweat lodges are usually safe. People use them all the time. But the dangers, although rare, can include heat-induced illnesses, asphyxiation from carbon monoxide poisoning, and exploding rocks. Autopsies were to be conducted on the deceased Friday afternoon. Blood samples were to be checked for poisons, and investigators were looking into the activities, foods, and medical histories of all involved. We're looking at everything, said Dwight DeEvelin, Yavapai County Sheriff's spokesman. According to DeEvelin, other witnesses, 64 people were taking part in the sweat lodge ceremony, which lasted about 2 hours and was being hosted by James Arthur Ray, an author and spiritual help entrepreneur. Ray's spokesman, Howard Bragman, confirmed that his client was inside the sweat lodge Thursday evening and was interviewed at the scene. We express our deepest condolences to those who lost friends and family, but we pray for a speedy recovery for those who took ill, Bragman said. At this point, there are more questions than answers, so it would not be appropriate to comment further. When fire crews arrived at the scene, people were doing CPR on the unconscious victims. Other sweat lodge participants complained of weakness and dizziness. The ritual in sweat lodges is helpful in restoring balance and changing people's attitudes and self-image, said Joseph Bruchek, author of Native American Sweat Lodge History and Legends. People have died in sweat lodges in the past. They were either sick tribal elders who voluntarily stayed until they died, or people who were in poor health. The sweat lodge needs to be respected, Bruchek said. When you imitate somebody's traditions, you don't know what you are doing. There's a danger of doing something very wrong. The victims were attending the ceremony during the final day of a five-day program called Spiritual Warrior, which Ray has conducted at the resort annually since 2003. Ray's website lists the cost for next year's program at $9,695 per person. On a side note, Native American ceremonies are for free. If you find somebody charging for Native American ceremonies, turn around and maybe report it to your nearest Native American who's able to do something about that. Back to the story. Ray's program brochure promises participants will push themselves past their self-imposed and conditions bordered and learn and apply the awesome power of integrity of action. It describes a sweat lodge as a ceremonial sauna involving tight enclosed spaces and intense temperatures. Ray, a frequent guest on a TV talk show, calls himself a personal success strategist, and his website details a sampler of international spiritual philosophies that he has fused into his program. His book, Harmonic Wealth, contends that one can become a millionaire through spiritual studies. The Associated Press reported that eerily, Ray made this posting on his Twitter account just hours before the deaths. Still in Spiritual Warrior, for anything new to live, something first must die. What needs to die in you so that new life can emerge? The posting and two others were deleted Friday afternoon. The resort founders Michael and Amira Hamilton would not comment. Sedona is an international mecca for New Age beliefs and purportedly the site of numerous vortexes or natural energy confluences thought to enhance spirituality and well-being. Some questioned why there were so many people in a sweat lodge at once. Jennifer Gentry, a sales associate at Sedona Crystal Vortex in Uptown Sedona, said that she has been in several sweat lodge ceremonies and they were typically are events for four or five people, maybe as many as 10, but never something she has done with strangers. In my opinion, it's a sacred ceremony. You shouldn't sell it. You shouldn't have that many people in it. The Associated Press contributed to this article. The question was back, how did it go? Oh, some questions why there were so many people in the sweat lodge at once. Because he's charging them $9,695. I've done the math on this. And let me get back here to the number. Oh, darn it. Somebody texted me, and I can't get back to my math on that. Anyways, it turned out to be something like $640,000+ that he made off of doing this ceremony. That is despicable. I cannot even imagine the audacity to charge for, number one, for a Native American sweat lodge, number two, $10,000, number three, having 64 people in a sweat lodge. That is crazy. Here's another story on the same subject. Valerie Talaman selling the sacred for a big price. The October 9 headlines read, sweat lodge disaster and two dead, 19 taken to hospital, 64 people in a sweat lodge. Except that it wasn't a real sweat lodge. It was a bastardized version of a sacred ceremony sold by a multimillionaire who charged people $9,695 a pop for his spiritual warrior, in quotes, retreat in Sedona, Arizona. The man responsible, self-help spiritual entrepreneur James Arthur Ray, claimed the New Age retreat would absolutely change your life. It did. It took the lives of a father of three children and a healthy young woman. It also caused burns, respiratory arrest, kidney failure, loss of consciousness, and dehydration for other paying customers who were hospitalized. Ray immediately fled the state and is refusing to tell detectives what happened during his two-hour spiritual cleansing ritual at the Angel Valley Spiritual Retreat, according to Yavapai County Sheriff Steve Waugh.